That's how I go through life.
Are we good?
All right. We are back in session. Welcome back, everybody. The rules remain the same. No disruptions, please. Please be respectful of people at the mic. Understand you will hear opinions that differ from your own. Council rules are that we don't boo people. We don't shout at people. Thumbs up if you like it. Thumbs down if you don't. None of us like people to be removed from the chamber, but if you're disruptive and you don't abide by the warnings that are given, if you are being disruptive, you will be asked to leave, and we don't want that to happen. So let's all just listen respectfully. It will be a long afternoon. For those of you here to testify publicly, thank you. Plan on 2 minutes for public testimony. The way it works is you'll come to the microphone. The microphones move around. Keep the microphone about this far from you. They're really sensitive microphones. So 6-ish, 7 inches is usually about right. Name for the record. We do not need your address. If you're a lobbyist, we do need to know that if you're a lobbyist. And if you're here representing an organization, that is helpful too. You'll have 2 minutes. When 1 minute and 30 seconds is gone, a yellow light on that little box in front of me goes off. When your time is up, you will hear beeping and you will see a red light. That means you need to finish at that time to be respectful for the people who follow. So without further ado, Carla, please read the next item.
Okay, item 204, amend to make permanent the mandatory relocation assistance for involuntary displacement of tenants under affordable housing preservation and Portland renter protections.
Colleagues, today the City Council will take up a set of policies that are designed to protect tenants in an increasingly unaffordable rental market. This ordinance, in my opinion, if adopted, cements 3 significant policy wins. First, this makes permanent an existing policy requiring landlords to provide relocation assistance to tenants they evict without cause or who cannot afford a double-digit rent increase. Next, we cover more renters under the policy by removing the exemption for landlords who only operate a single rental unit. Finally, we lay the groundwork for a rental registration system so that we can collect quality data on the rental market in Portland. This is something that both housing advocates and landlord advocates have asked for. These 3 items move the ball forward significantly as we work to ensure that housing in Portland remains both accessible and affordable. And more so, I see this as a pragmatic approach that addresses the primary issues that have been expressed throughout this process. I know that there are those in this room and elsewhere who think this measure goes too far, that landlords will be unduly burdened by some of the provisions in the ordinance. I also know that there are many in this room who think the measure doesn't go far enough and that we should consider changes both big and small to address this particular criticism. As we worked on the policy that's in front of us today, I had to take time to consider recommendations from our technical advisory committee. I relied on the ideas and the advice of my fellow city commissioners. I sought to understand alternative points of view, and there wasn't always just one view or another. Sometimes there were 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 views on a given issue. I worked hard to engage all of those who historically have had limited access to City Hall. And finally, I took feedback from those who would be the most directly impacted by these policies. Ultimately, it's my obligation to craft the best policy possible. I know there will be criticisms. For example, the question has been raised, could this policy affect the rental landscape for landlords who have only one unit of rental housing? In other words, could it cause some landlords to remove their units from the rental market? On the margin, I believe it is very possible that some landlords will remove their units from the market. However, the broader stability provided to the overall rental market, in my opinion, outweighs the concerns of the loss of some units in the near term. Our goal has never changed. We have continued to ensure that we protect tenants in this market by being reasonable about the policies that we put forward. In removing the single unit exemption, we've placed other exemptions in place that support our values. First, we're exempting duplexes where the owner is in residence of one of the units. This supports the council's current policy around maintaining existing density in our neighborhoods. Second of all, we're exempting all auxiliary dwelling units, otherwise known as ADUs, on a property where, once again, the owner is in residence. The city has long had a policy of increasing ADUs as a way to alleviate the housing crisis and increase our housing stock. Third, if an owner rents temporarily for up to 3 years and then returns to their residence, this is also exempt. We want owners to be able to temporarily increase our housing stock rather than leaving units vacant and unused. Fourth, if a member of the military is deployed and returns, this too will be exempt. This is simply the right thing to do, and I'm happy to include it in the ordinance. Fifth, we live in an ever-changing world. Parents are aging, people have older relatives, adult children are struggling in the midst of this housing crisis. People need to support their families. If a family member is moved into a unit, this will also be exempt. That said, I've heard examples from people who have noted that in other cities that have similar exemptions, those exemptions can be gamed. So I've directed the Housing Bureau to carefully construct rules around this to prevent abuse. Defining what a family member is could in and of itself become a very complicated process. In some communities here, we have grandparents raising grandchildren. They're doing the right thing, so I don't want to be punitive. If a family is in crisis, we want to help support them. I also want a time threshold so that the unit will be occupied for a period of time to prevent abuse. Personally, I believe that should be at least 1 year or longer. Six, if an affordable housing unit is already regulated by the federal, state, or local government, that should be exempt. Seventh, if a dwelling unit is rendered uninhabitable through no fault of the landlord, this too is exempt. It's not just natural disasters we're talking about. Think about the gas explosion that we had in Northwest Portland a little over a year ago. That was no fault of the landlord, and frankly, in good conscience, I could not subject a landlord in that particular circumstance to additional burdens. There is significant legal precedent on this issue, and it's also generally included in the vast majority of rental contracts. These are all reasonable. They include Portland Housing Bureau monitoring and reporting requirements and will also be carefully constructed through administrative rules in many cases. During this process, I was reminded of one thing overwhelmingly. We are in a housing emergency and people are suffering. I was reminded of the choices that renters are frequently asked to make, of moving farther away from places of employment and farther away from where their kids get their education in search of affordability. I was reminded of people deciding which utilities they could afford to forego. I was reminded of people who delayed the reporting of needed housing repairs out of fear of eviction. I was reminded of how rent increases and evictions have families in constant fear of displacement, and sometimes that even means displacement right onto the streets of our own community. As mayor, I must lead in addressing these concerns. And this policy puts Portland in a leadership position with regard to tenant rights. I'm also reminded of the limited sets of tools that the city currently has at its disposal. I want to remind everybody that for several years, I have been a supporter of. And last year, I asked the legislature to support a just cause eviction standard. The legislature was not able to do that, to get it done last year. So while we're going to continue down that path, because I think it makes sense to have a broad framework rather than a narrow one, we have to do the best we can to address the crisis that exists today in our community with the tools and the resources that we have available. Thank you to the advisory committee. I advocated for the creation of this committee so I could be informed by industry professionals. I value the work you did. You provided me no fewer than 46 different specific policy recommendations. Not all of them made it into this particular ordinance, but the vast majority did. And again, I want to thank you for your hard work. I want to thank my colleagues on the City Council. You've helped my team and I think through some very complex policy issues, and you'll find that each aspect of this ordinance has very significant trade-offs. And my job is to weigh those trade-offs, and I did my level best in helping to draft this ordinance. I look forward to having the Rental Services Commission in monitoring the continued future of our relocation policy. And I'm going to continue to work for advocates both on the renter and owner sides of this equation, along with property management companies and professionals on the tools that can aid us nationally, at the state level, and most especially at the local level to help us to continue to address this housing crisis. My belief is that housing is a human right. And I'm pledging wherever you are in this equation that I will work with you to continue to positively address this issue for the betterment of all of us in this community. Thank you, and at this point I will turn it over to my colleagues, starting with Commissioner Udaly.
Thank you, Mayor. Last January, our city was facing the heart-wrenching realities of a rental market that provided no protection for tenants from unexpected displacement from their homes, including multiple instances of entire multifamily developments with primarily low-income residents being issued no-cause evictions or receiving huge rent increases as high as 100%. We had families with jobs and small children being turned out into the street because they didn't have the means to pay thousands of dollars to secure new housing that they could barely, if at all, afford. We had school principals and teachers pleading with us to protect their students from being torn from their school communities. We had communities begging us to help keep them together and keep them in homes they had lived in for years, sometimes decades. As a renter myself, I could directly relate to what they were going through. I had borne the cost of no-cause and economic evictions twice. I had struggled with housing costs that ate up 50% or more of my income for years. Through our inaction as a state and as a city, we allowed for conditions to progress to the point where few renters could feel safe or stable in their homes anymore. We allowed an unregulated market to dictate what happened to children and to seniors and people with disabilities on fixed incomes. We weren't protecting some of the most vulnerable members of our community, which is our primary job, as far as I'm concerned. When we introduced relocation assistance last February as a step toward increasing stability and the chances that families could afford to find a new home, we knew it wasn't going to solve our housing crisis. We only hoped that it would stem the tide of cost-burdening displacement and homelessness, especially for the 25% of our residents currently struggling to afford the roofs over their heads. Because of state interference with our local power to regulate and manage our rental housing market, relocation assistance was virtually the only tool left at our disposal. and I'm so grateful to my colleagues for recognizing its value and supporting this effort. I want to acknowledge that this policy would look very different if it was left up to any single commissioner. But this is a group effort requiring compromise from all of us. And while I have some concerns, I'm going to call them yellow flags that I've raised, in which I'll be watching closely, I want to acknowledge that we are taking a huge step forward today in the right direction, and that is something to celebrate, even if it's not perfect. Thank you for the twinkle fingers. I welcome them. Today, we had Michael Buonocore, the ED of Home Forward, giving testimony on another item, and he mentioned the feeling that it's never enough. We can never do enough, and I have that feeling every day. I have that feeling today, but let's take a moment and celebrate this today. So I can say with confidence that this policy has had an overwhelmingly positive impact for the tenants who were covered by it. There has not been a single day, and this is not an exaggeration, that has gone by since this policy was originally passed that our office hasn't received a phone call or an email about relocation assistance. As expected, some but not all landlords are unhappy with it. Also, as expected, many tenants thank us for providing a modicum of stability and security amidst this unprecedented 8-year and counting housing crisis. But the communications that have been the most challenging are the ones that we have gotten from those tenants, often very low income, who were not covered by relocation due to the one-unit exemption. What we have learned over the last year is that there are as many as 20,000 single-owned units on the rental market, which provide housing for over 40,000 residents. These homes are concentrated in some of our most racially diverse and low-income neighborhoods, which means that our policy wasn't benefiting tens of thousands of the residents that it was designed to protect. I am pleased, so pleased, that we are here to consider eliminating the one-unit exemption and making this policy permanent today. I want to be clear about my stance. This is absolutely the right thing to do. However, I also want to acknowledge that the elimination of this exemption could create a true financial hardship for a small number of landlords, and that's why I strongly urge the Mayor's Office and the Portland Housing Bureau to proceed with creating a hardship waiver process for those landlords. The city alone cannot solve this crisis. It's a crisis that's driven by many circumstances beyond our control, from the federal government abandoning its obligation to fund affordable housing, to growing income inequality, to huge Wall Street investment firms and foreign investors buying up our real estate and rental properties. We are also facing, as a city, the ultimate outcome of social engineering through discriminatory public policy that began decades ago. We are not responsible for creating that policy, but we are responsible for the remedy, and this is part of it. So I'm going to save my thanks for the end, which actually might be next week. And with all that being said, I look forward to hearing from the public and for our deliberations, the deliberations we're about to have. Thank you.
Very good. We have Housing Director Shannon Callahan and Matt Chybold to provide an overview of the policy framework. Why don't you kick us off today?
Thank you, Mayor and Commissioner. Shannon Callahan from the Portland Housing Bureau. So as you've retold today, Council first adopted a temporary relocation assistance policy in 2017. You convened a technical assistance group who met and discussed over 43 distinct policy issues, working for nearly a year in more than 45 hours of very involved meetings. After all of these issues were discussed, we consulted and worked with the mayor's office on the development of the policy that you see before you today. You'll see a timeline of all of the work that has gone on to the various stages of this policy. Matthew will now give you an overview of some of the policy choices, and then I will close with a little bit regarding next steps for the Housing Bureau in terms of administrative rule development.
So the mayor already mentioned many of the changes, but I just want to hit the key highlights, and then we can field questions. So there was a request from the technical group to add some clarity in the code language around payment and notification timelines. So through the process since last year, we've made those adjustments. We've added a requirement for landlords to provide tenants information on relocation assistance and their rights and responsibilities, given that it can be somewhat of a complicated process in terms of what their options are, that they'll get that information when they receive different notices that are in city code. And we added some clear differentiation between what we call the triggering events, which are the no-cause eviction, a rent increase of 10% or more, as well as non-renewal of lease or not renewing the lease on similar terms. So those are some of the larger modifications that don't relate to the exemptions. When looking at the exemptions, just to kind of go through really quick, the single unit exemption was eliminated, and there are 11 exemptions in here. The owner-occupied duplex, the owner-occupied site where there are ADUs when the owner is is on the site, landlord renting a primary residence during absence of not more than 3 years, and military service, moving in of immediate family member, regulated affordable housing, housing paying federal relocation assistance, units uninhabitable through no action or inaction of the landlord or the tenant, and then units that are permitted for demolition before being rented, and the renter is informed that the unit will be demolished, and it is a short-term rental. It's a long-term rental, but for a shorter period of time. So those are the exemptions in the ordinance.
Can you go back one bullet? I don't understand this 60-plus years of regulated affordable housing.
If it's affordable housing and it's regulated by the federal government, the state government, or the local government, for at least 60 years, it will be exempt from relocation assistance payments.
So if it's less than 60 years,
it is not exempt in the ordinance. And, you know, most regulated affordable housing is exempt anyway, given the provisions in the lease about having to make only a certain amount of money, and most events that a agency that owns and operates regulated housing would come with federal relocation requirements. And so most regulated affordable housing would be already exempt, but there was some requests for clarification in the code, just because there was some confusion in the earlier versions, and so we wanted to add that in to clarify that. It was a request of some of our members of our technical committee.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Also added to this ordinance is the requirement that all landlords must report to the Housing Bureau after paying relocation. We're trying to make sure that we collect good data and are tracking our policies going forward. All landlords must also submit applications to the Housing Bureau to be eligible for any of the exemptions that you see on this list. And finally, we will, at the Housing Bureau, develop administrative rules both on an interim basis and on a permanent basis if you move forward with this ordinance. We also have been requested to provide staffing for an information line to be able to answer tenant questions as well as landlord questions. We have some triage in place with the current staffing, but I will note that we'll be talking with you through the budget process as well. So, thank you.
Very good. We have two panels of invited testimony before we get to public testimony. I know that we have one amendment on the table. Commissioner, I'll let you provide that at your leisure. You can either do it now or later.
I'd like to just put it on the table if that's all right with you.
Let's go ahead and do it.
Testimony. So this is to add number 12 to the list of exemptions and under code chapter 30.01.08. 85G. And this would add number 12, a dwelling unit where the landlord has provided a fixed-term tenancy and notified the tenant prior to occupancy of the landlord's intent to sell or permanently convert the dwelling unit to a use other than a dwelling unit subject to the Act.
And I will second that for discussion purposes. Is there any further discussion on that before we go to the panel and then take public testimony?
This is to address one of the challenges that we've received in testimony, which is about where there's a fixed-term contract, where at the beginning it was clear to the tenant that it was going to be for a certain length of time. And I believe that this is true to that.
Very good. All right, our first panel. Laura Galino De Lovato, Northwest Pilot Project. And she was on our technical advisory committee and is also serving on the Rental Services Commission. Thank you very much for your service. Mike Noose, Rare Bird, Real Estate Investment. He also served on the technical advisory committee and the Rental Services Commission. Again, thank you. Appreciate your being here today.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Shall I start?
Please do.
Good afternoon, Commissioners, and thanks for the opportunity to speak about this important issue. My name is Laura Galino De Lovato. I'm the Executive Director of Northwest Pilot Project, and as the Mayor said, I served on the Technical Advisory Committee for the Relocation Ordinance and am a member of the Renter Services Commission. For those of you who aren't familiar with Northwest Pilot Project, we are a small but effective nonprofit organization that provides housing assistance to individuals 55 and older in Multnomah County. The majority of our clients, about 80% of them, are extremely low income, meaning that they have an income of $15,700 or less annually. That's their entire annual income. While we don't own or manage any properties, our services are critical to housing stability for this very specific population. Last fiscal year, we stabilized about 250 low-income seniors in housing, preventing their potential homelessness. And we also placed into housing another 250 low-income seniors from situation of homelessness. And that was in a really, really tough housing year and a housing crisis. So I'm here on behalf of the clients that we serve. Our clients are on fixed incomes from Social Security, Social Security Disability Insurance, or SSI, Supplemental Security Income. None of these sources of incomes have large annual increases and are pretty minimal to begin with. Most of our clients have at least one disability and are unlikely to be able to supplement their income by getting employment. So being able to go out and raise their income to address higher rent is not something that they are likely going to be able to do. They rely on Northwest Pilot Project to provide assistance with navigating the rental housing search, getting on waiting lists for housing, for subsidized housing, paying a deposit, or getting short-term rent assistance. I'm also here to request that the City Council today vote in favor of making this ordinance permanent. While the ordinance isn't perfect, it is an important part of the support network and a protection that is especially important for low-income renters. Because of their low income, many of NWPP's clients stand to benefit from this ordinance if their rent were raised 10% or more, or if their existing lease was terminated for no cause. In our experience in the past year since the ordinance first passed, some of our clients, landlords or property owners, were deterred from raising rents more than 10% because, we believe, of the ordinance and the desire to avoid paying the relocation. That actually did what it was supposed to do. It helped tenants stabilize in their housing. We also had a few cases of landlords choosing not to end a lease because of the potential of causing, triggering relocation. I can't emphasize really enough how important it's been for our clients for whom a significant rent increase or a move not of their choice puts them at risk of being homeless. And that's one of the things that we see as an important role in what we do. While we support the ordinance being made permanent, there were a few issues that were included in the ordinance after the Technical Assistance Committee's last meeting on February 9th that weren't shared with those of us who were on the committee until last Friday in the final copy of the ordinance. I'm happy to hear that you, Mayor Wheeler, and the Housing Bureau are going to address some of the issues through rulemaking and administration. We're particularly concerned about item G7 that exempts a landlord from paying relocation to a tenant whose lease is terminated in order for an immediate family member to occupy the dwelling unit, in part because of the possibility of abuse, lack of definitions about what a family member is, lack of definitions around timing, and in part because the Technical Advisory Committee did not have an opportunity to discuss the pros and cons of that and how it would affect tenants, how it would affect landlords and homeowners. So from a process standpoint, it was disappointing to have that show up after we had met. But we understand, again, that it's going to continue to be addressed. And I think those of us who are serving on the Rental Services Commission are going to be pleased to be able to continue to address this and make sure that some
will.
Of these
yes
are addressed. I have to say personally, from a personal perspective, as well as from the perspective of representing low-income renters, I found the experience of being on the Relocation Technical Assistance Committee to be very informative, educational. It was emotional and frustrating. I appreciate every single one of the other members in that committee. I learned so much, and I think we all benefited from being able to listen to the different perspectives. So thank you all for doing that service. And I would add one other small thing, which is that as a member of that committee and also as a member of the Rental Services Commission, I've found that people who are giving their time, whether in a professional volunteer capacity, to these committees or commissions are doing so out of a real desire to be helpful. So leverage our expertise, use that expertise. You asked us for it. We're at the table. Ask us. Let us participate. Let us help.
Well said. Thank you. Appreciate it very much, and thanks for your service and your continued service. Yeah. Good afternoon.
Hello. Thank you very much for – I just want to thank the City Council for inviting me to testify today or to provide testimony today. Thank you for the invite to the Rental Services Commission. I'm very proud and privileged to be on that. And thank you for the invite to be part of the Technical Advisory Committee. No one can argue that Portland has seen a major economic shift over the past few years. It's no longer the little big city that I visited as a young child. It's no longer the big little city that I moved to as a young adult in my late teens. That's led to record level of tourism, record level of commercial real estate investment, record level of multifamily real estate investment. And at the end has resulted in a housing crisis. I don't think that that can be ignored. When we're facing an economic shift like we've seen, it's the onus is on leaders of our city to provide new tools to combat what's going on. I do believe that the relocation policy is the best tool that we have to treat what I believe is the largest symptom of a housing crisis, which is displacement. By no means do I believe this is a comprehensive tool, but it's the only tool that we have that directly affects the biggest problem I see that our community faces. I think we need to create more tools. I think Mayor Wheeler, your recent public announcement of being investing in the framework building in the Home Forwards project, affordable housing project over by the convention center, your state legislation to combine different forms of government financing as another tool to provide more supply to the market. And I like the fact that you're looking at that from a comprehensive standpoint. I was asked today to talk about two Two things, one on the policy and my thoughts in general, and then also on the process. I've chosen to address three points of the ordinance today that I feel were well heard in the outcome of those. First, the mismatching of the timelines in a federally backed owner-occupied loan requiring occupancy of a buyer 60 days after purchase, and how that contradicts the policy for the 90 days timeline in the relocation policy. I think that that will go a long ways in helping keep from disrupting the retail market, the house selling market, by recognizing that mismatch and creating policy around it. With a permanent relocation housing policy, I think it's extremely important, and I think there is a lot of agreement on the technical advisory committee to recalculate reload costs on a consistent basis, whether that's going to be 1 year or 2 years. I think this is the best way that we can actually make this a market-driven policy. And we have to look at market conditions going forward on a consistent basis. That may mean markets going down. It may mean markets going up. But it gives a tool in place to allow the policy to change to given market conditions. And I believe that this is a policy that does need to be tied to the market. I think the most discussed topic outside of the timeline of relocation assistance and when that gets paid and notices given was the one-unit exemption. There's a lot of debate about that. I believe Mayor Wheeler and the council that you will put forth a good forth effort to create a waiver policy. And I think that's essential. One, I think basically this policy takes a symptom in the marketplace and puts the funding solely on one part of the part of the population. I think by exempting all one-unit landlords, it's actually segmenting that onus on a smaller part of the population. And I think it's important to lift that exemption, but create a hardship waiver for people, for landlords that truly do need that financial assistance. This policy isn't perfect, and I'm sure you're going to hear plenty of testimony today as to that fact. Unintended consequences on the tenant side, unintended consequences on the landlord side. And I agree with you, Mayor Wheeler, when you say that there's plenty of complaining on both sides of the table, which probably says that this is a good point to start. And I also believe that through the Renter Services Commission, we'll have the ability to add more feedback and potentially tweak that ordinance to make it better moving forward. Regarding the process, I felt compelled to get engaged in the process this time last year of coming to my first city council meeting and seeing what's created behind that process. I engaged for two reasons. One, I wanted to have a positive impact in my community. And two, I also wanted to be heard and I wanted to add more perspective to the commission. And I think for the most part, all of the stakeholders at the Technical Advisory Committee and also the commissioners on the Rental Service Commission have that same desire to provide impact and to be heard. In order for us to produce positive solutions, both sides have to feel like they're being heard. I was also a member of the Stakeholder Committee for the Security Deposit. No one wants to be in a position when you're taking time out of your day to be part of this and feel like you're marking a box in a procedure. Unfortunately, in the Security Deposit Stakeholders Committee, I felt like I marked a box. I didn't feel heard. I want to contrast that with my experience with the Technical Advisory Committee. The leadership from Matt and his team, Victoria, Andres, Cupid, Andrea earlier on, leadership was on point. It guided us through that process. Getting a personal phone call from the Wheeler, from Mayor Wheeler one day after a disappointing meeting made me feel heard. I think there was a lot of trust that was gained at the table over the 10 months or so while that committee was in place. And that was important to come to agreement on the timelines of the relocation policy. It was important to allow ourselves to be vulnerable at the table and speak what we felt in order to provide more perspective. Ultimately, more perspective and more experience is what leads to better policy. And I think that advisory committee that you put together had an array of experience at the table. Some really good community leaders that were passionate, knowledgeable, and experienced providing their input. Earlier this year, the first meeting of the Rental Services Commission, we were given a great history lesson on the fair housing laws or lack of fair housing laws in Portland's checkered past, deed restrictions foreseen, creating some of the demographic divides that we had in the city. The massive use of eminent domain for Emanuel Hospital and for the Memorial Coliseum and how that impacted our committee. Redlining and the lack of financing available to minorities and how that affected the committee and created the community and created that direction. It's a very important part of that process for everyone to be educated on our past. Unfortunately, I do feel like there's some education that's been missing. I don't feel like there's been more perspective and education given to the factors that drive property ownership, the basic economics of owning and managing a rental property, the decisions that it takes to buy property, the risk that creates to buy property, the difficulty it is to acquire a loan, the ability to set expenses and reserves, the difficulty in navigating fair housing laws and state laws when placing tenants. And I believe that if we can set some more time to aside to educate the commission on how these elements play out in Portland, we have a greater chance of coming up with stronger and sustainable solutions that can be embraced by landlords and tenants alike. And so that's where I'm at. I do feel support for this policy. I think it's a bold step. I said that a year ago, and I still believe that today. I feel like there's a lot of work to be done, and I think the Rental Services Commission can be part of that. I hope that we continue to bring more perspective in as we continue to make these policy decisions. Thank you for having me.
Very good. Thank you both for your testimony. And I like your suggestion with regard to the information sharing that needs to happen right up front. And I'd actually love to work with you to help build a panel
around
those topics that you mentioned, the risk, ownership, establishing reserves, the difficulty in navigating some of the regulatory environment. I think that's useful perspective.
Thank you.
I'd love to work with you on
awesome.
That.
Awesome. I appreciate it.
Thank you both for your continued service.
Thank you.
We really appreciate it. And our second and final panel is Christian Bryant from the Portland Area Rental Owners Association. Christian was on our technical advisory committee and will also continue on the Rental Services Commission. Katrina Holland is here, and she is from the Community Alliance of Tenants. She was also on the technical advisory committee and is on the Rental Services Commission. Welcome. And Christina Dirks, Legal Aid Services of Oregon. She was also on the technical advisory committee and on the Rental Services Commission. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Afternoon.
Would you like to start us off?
Sure.
Thank you.
As you mentioned, I'm Christian Bryant. I'm president of the Portland Area Rental Owners Association, as well as a real estate investor association, also own my own property management firm. By sheer happenstance and coincidence of timing, I also happen to be a tenant through all of this, too. First, I did want to say thank you for inviting us here for testimony. And I do commend the city on creating both the oversight committee for the mandatory relocation ordinance as well as the Rental Services Commission. And I think, whether you end up liking the end result or not, at the very least being asked to voice your opinion without being in one of the elected seats that actually casts a vote, that's the most that you can ask for. So I do appreciate that. And, we can't deny the fact that we have had housing issues. And, all of us that represent a group of citizens in this city, of course, get our own, self-selected data set because we hear from our group specifically. I don't hear from, get calls directly from tenants that are being displaced, but I do hear from those landlords that only have one unit or two units. And I'm sure those just sitting here at my table would say the same, just the opposite, So recognizing that, I can only speak to what I know. And I know I'll try to keep it somewhat brief because I know City Council has already heard majority of my statements through the committees that I serve on. First, I do think definitely not all. There's always room within legislation to help make things better for pockets of the community that are not being served properly or being protected properly. I do think a lot of the issues that have risen to the top of our debates lately started off with a major divide in discrepancy between supply and demand. I know that's not the cause of everything, but if us landlords were very competitive under a normal market condition, you'll see a 10% swing in rent amounts just from September to January, just going from summer to winter, because we're very competitive with each other and we want to move, get tenants into our units and give them a place to live to be able to collect rent. Also, when there is more competition among landlords, we don't and you don't see rents going up because we're competing with each other. You don't see us asking tenants to move out to do major renovations because we haven't seen increases in rents to really justify it. So one thing I do have to put out there, which I have said from the beginning, I do agree with Mike in that this is, for all intents and purposes, does seem like our only specific tool that we have at our disposal right now to address those issues. But I do feel that it should remain a temporary fix because I do believe in the long term with landlords and tenants working together along with the city that a lot of the issues will at least be alleviated. I don't think you'll ever solve all of the problems, though. There's two other main points I just want to make sure I brought up here. One being on the one unit exemption. I do completely understand, if, there's a landlord that has, many different units and they've got, plenty of reserves built up and everything. I can see the reasoning. But with our association, the vast majority, easily 85% plus have less than three units. And majority of the landlords that we work with, they manage things themselves, but they are, of course, the section of landlords that manage themselves and go out of their way to be part of associations like ours to make sure they know the laws and are managing them properly and responsibly. But there are a significant amount that if they have even just one, two, even three units to where a $4,500 expense, which currently would be the maximum that it could be, that could be the difference between, them being able to afford their next two mortgage payments on that property or not. So I would hope we would maintain that exemption. But if we do have to see that go away, I would strongly urge the city to really look at how they can support those landlords that do find themselves in that position. Because the reality is if you do have a landlord in that position, it's either going to be something where their property gets foreclosed on or they're forced to sell it. And if it's property that's four units or less, you have a significant amount of first-time investors out there wanting to get into being a landlord as part of their retirement plan or whatever it may be. And typically that first unit, multi-unit they buy is going to be something where they live in one of the units. Or if it's a single-family home, there's still pretty low supply on the sales side of the market as well. And so you have a high chance of someone buying it that's just going to live in it. Each one of those, losing, 50 units here or there doesn't necessarily have a huge impact. But when you combine that with people thinking about getting into the industry, second-guessing investing in the city of Salem, I feel like long-term that could definitely have a significant impact on our supply. So I would urge that we don't remove the exemption for one units, but if we absolutely have to, we definitely need some sort of plan in place to not lose those units just because the landlord can't afford it. Last thing, just really quick, I just noticed it when housing was talking about the exemptions in their presentation. One of the exemptions that's proposed states that that unit would be exempt if it became unlivable by no action or interaction by a landlord or tenant. I'm sure this would probably get sussed out in the through the rules or through...
We fixed that. We took the tenant or tenants out.
Oh, okay. On their presentation, it was still in there. That was perfect. So thank you, Commissioner Fritz. Yeah, that was exactly what I was going to bring up. So
that's another amendment. That is a problem.
So we'll...
We'll
hear from housing on that at the end.
Yeah, basically.
Thank you.
I thought that had
been basically just the way it was written, technically, a tenant could purposely damage the unit to where it's unlivable and still qualify for relocation. But if you remove the word tenant out of that particular sentence, then I think it creates the intent, but to be discussed.
So I had actually brought that to the mayor's staff's attention earlier and was under the impression that had been fixed. So I think it's a Scrivener's error.
Okay, we'll have the housing folks look at that.
Very good.
Thank you.
Other than that, thank you very much for having
appreciate
me.
Appreciate it. Thank you for your service. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to give testimony today about the permanent relocation ordinance. For the record, my name is Katrina Holland, Executive Director of Community Alliance of Tenants, member of the Relocation Technical Advisory Committee, and also a member of the Rental Services Commission. Community Alliance of Tenants is a tenants' rights organization that served this community for the last almost 22 years. As advocates for tenants, especially those most impacted by the housing crisis, for many of us, this crisis is not new. It has stretched decades for people of color and those with barriers to housing. And we believe that the permanent relocation ordinance before us today is an important step forward toward the symbiotic housing relationship we wish to see between landlords and tenants. We are hopeful that this policy sets a precedent, and we believe it prioritizes a healthy balance in a severely unbalanced relationship right now in the state of Oregon, despite the long-term tools that we need. While we have a ways to go when it comes to long-term changes in landlord-tenant law at the state level to help support a healthier populace, a more stable economic conditions across different income spectrums, and more stable neighborhoods and children, relocation is a step in a right direction. So thank you for your leadership.
Thank you
for the process. It can't lie, it was long and arduous, but it was very necessary, and I think we talked through some of the issues that we needed to talk through. We are supportive of permanent relocation policy for the following reasons. Of course, the reasons that Mayor Wheeler mentioned today. In addition, involuntary displacement affects us all as a community, especially when it leads to homelessness. We believe and have seen, and we've all experienced, the externalities created by a business decision between one person and another, and we don't believe that it has to continue to fall on the rest of the population to make up that burden. Relocation assistance also helps to increase the likelihood of successful relocation for tenants in unexpected crisis. Involuntary displacement due to a rent increase or no-cause termination can not only be anxiety-provoking and create homelessness or transience, but it creates a situation where sometimes they're not able to relocate and they end up on our streets. So relocation helps to buffer that. We also believe that this arrangement brings more balance, as I said earlier, to the relationship that should be symbiotic. Involuntary displacement is a severe burden on a tenant in any circumstance, whether exempted or unexempted. And this burden, triggered by a landlord's conscious actions, should not rest solely on the shoulders of a tenant. Relocation helps to share that burden created by one party in that relationship. Relocation also helps in a time when we don't have the tools we need to address involuntary displacement in the first place. Absent the necessary common sense rent stabilization policies and just cause eviction standards, relocation helps to soften the blow of involuntary displacement, which at present is legally permitted in Oregon. And the outcomes we see every day as unreasonable rent increases and discriminatory or retaliatory no-cause evictions. Finally, though it doesn't eradicate the fear, we do believe that it helps to lessen the fear of retaliation. We have seen on our hotline that some people are a little bit more, they're not as apprehensive to ask for necessary repairs in fear of retaliation because relocation helps to add a layer of protection. While we express strong support for this relocation ordinance, please also understand our grave concerns, which CAT has sent via email to the mayor's office and a few others on February 26, 2018. We are hoping for further amendments, hopefully effective today because they are simple, that we feel help to demonstrate commitment to some very important values that we have disclosed as a city. And the city of Portland has identified in its commitment to equity. First, our city and community have expressed a commitment to supporting those most impacted by the housing crisis, and the city has boldly claimed equity goals. However, the current long-term policy includes a flat exemption for federal, state, and local regulated affordable housing for 60-plus years in subsection G8. If anyone needs relocation the most, even in nuanced circumstances, it is this population. Due to severe shortage of affordable housing that is both regulated and market rate, when families are displaced from affordable housing, they most often have to relocate to market rate housing, or they end up on the streets or end up on the couches, often sometimes ending up on waiting lists that can be months to years long. Relocation payments are critical in these scenarios as they are the least likely population to be able to save for an unexpected displacement event and are already scraping by. As advocates for this population for almost 22 years, we know that exempting them from support during voluntary displacement could be one of the biggest mistakes we make as a city. The Relocation Technical Advisory Committee never talked about a straight exemption, and we talked through different nuances or different circumstances in which there should be or could be with additional support. So Community Alliance of Tenants is requesting that this language be stricken from the code, and we specifically request that Council mandate the Rental Services Commission to take up the issue with local affordable housing providers to talk through this more nuanced language that addresses the issues highlighted in the Relocation Technical Advisory Committee during deliberation in the past year around federal changes, rent changes, income changes, and more. A straight exemption would not hold up our values to supporting those most impacted, nor does it demonstrate a commitment to equity, as data shows that based on median incomes, people of color, low-wage workers, and folks with disabilities, seniors, are most likely to live in some of these regulated affordable properties.
Katrina, if I can just interrupt.
Sure.
I also thought that was a curious exemption as you know by my question a few minutes ago. So, I mean, stripping away all the code of 60-plus years and all that, are we talking about Home Forward, basically?
I think we're talking about a number of groups. And in transparency, I emailed some of these affordable housing providers to let them know that we would be taking this position, and one indicated interest in engaging in this process of talking with the Rental Services Commission to develop this nuanced language, and a couple others said thanks for the heads up.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But no, it is not just Home Forward.
Okay. I'll want to ask some questions of staff more about this later.
Okay, thank you. Secondly, the City of Portland has prioritized equitable access. We talked in the Relocation Technical Advisory Committee about prescribing what kinds of information needs to be included in notice to tenants who are eligible for relocation assistance. And while we all agreed that a form isn't necessary and CAT withdrew its request for a form, we did agree that prescribing language should be included in this ordinance. This is to prevent a scenario where a landlord would simply place in a notice, see Portland City Code Section 30.01.085. And I think that we can all agree that city code is fairly cumbersome, even for folks who are used to legalese and jargon. This subsection does not help inform tenants of their rights and responsibilities as currently written. It could be abused. So we are requesting an amendment to include in the ordinance at least what type of information needs to be present and include that in city code. We believe this language should at least mandate that a notice to a tenant must include the amount of relocation to which the tenant is entitled, the time frame in which the tenant has to respond if applicable, and the timing of payment. A bunch of other things that
Katrina,
are going
to... before you get off that,
yes.
And I'm sorry, this, sorry to interrupt you, but
that's
I want to make
no
sure
worries.
We honor what you are saying. I will have the Housing Bureau come up at the end of all of this, and so I'm making a running list of issues that we want to talk about. I've had this conversation with the Housing Bureau, and there are actually multiple opportunities for tenant notification.
Mm-hmm.
And so I personally didn't think that was necessary, and I'll make sure that we have that conversation at the end.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And could I just ask, I've been out of the country for the last 2 weeks. Did you send that email about your concerns to me as well?
I did not. I sent it to Mayor Wheeler's office, but I can definitely send it.
Thank
for
you.
Sure. So again, while this is a positive direction and the process that we undertook as a city to negotiate a relocation policies, we believe it's pertinent to make sure that this policy does not leave most impacted populations out in the dark, and making that exemption does leave folks out in the dark. So we believe that these two amendments will help prevent that from happening. We're grateful to see the city of Portland take leadership on this issue and look forward to moving with you in a positive direction.
Thank you.
Mayor,
thank you. Commissioner Daly, you bet.
I don't want to dive in too deep, but for the first concern you raised, the flat exemption,
yeah,
I just want to make sure I understand, and you've already acknowledged it's a nuanced situation, but is it very common for a household to receive a no-cause eviction or a double-digit rent?